This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. We're on day 614 of the war and, of course, of hostages being held in Gaza. Yesterday was day 613, and that is something of a magical number in Judaism, 613, which of course corresponds to the number of mitzvot, the number of principles that Jews, observant Jews, are expected to adhere to, the so-called Tariag mitzvot. And on day 613, there were those who felt that the constellation was coming together, the stars were somehow combining in the numerology aspect in order to somehow bring about a miracle. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be, but we still hold out hope and optimism somehow that we still can see our hostages released. The Prime Minister has said that there has been some progress with the hostage negotiations. There are some reports suggesting that Hamas has become a little more flexible. I don't really know what that means. And in all honesty, looking at things entirely from an outside perspective, there is just really very little to give us hope to believe that something dramatic has changed. I mean, there clearly are changes that are taking place in Gaza. There are clearly changes in the way that the power is constructed and the power is represented in Gaza. There is little doubt that Hamas has lost a significant amount of its power, and yet it still holds the power to hold our hostages and to hold out on these negotiations. And, you know, we just can't really see an end to it. So we continue to somehow hope for a miracle. It wasn't yesterday, but maybe it'll be today or tomorrow. We certainly hope so. And just to indicate the extent of the parallel universes that we live in this country, this week in Tel Aviv is also Gay Pride Week. And there will be a Gay Pride Parade on Friday. This week is, of course, a culmination. That will be a culmination of many events that are taking place this week. And I notice, Howard, that you also managed to find the fact that Caitlyn Jenner will be the guest of honor.
Yeah, I thought that's incredible. I thought that's so awesome.
Yeah. So Caitlyn Jenner will be here to head up the Gay Pride events and will be, of course, guest of honor at the Gay Pride Parade on Friday. And as I say, that's just the extent of the parallel universes that we exist in right now with our hostages and with so many of our brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers, sons and daughters serving in the military right now. The war is ongoing. And yet we somehow have to live and we have to try to get back to some routine. And that's what Gay Pride Parade and Gay Pride Week is all about.
Incredible. It's such a contrast, and it's just such a strange world that exists at the moment. I mean, through all of that, the Houthis fired a missile towards Israel while threatening widespread retaliation against the attacks on ports in Yemen. What more do we know about this?
Well, it started really yesterday morning when the IDF confirmed that there were ports in Yemen that had been attacked by this time the Israeli Navy. And that was an interesting statement rather than the Air Force. And we know that for the Air Force planes to get to Yemen and back again takes quite a lot of arranging. They need to be refueled along the way, and they need to be accompanying jets that go along in the squadron that is dispatched to Yemen. So even though we know that our Air Force is perfectly capable of reaching there, there might have come a point where it might be easier to carry out these attacks from the sea. I'm not quite sure what the logic was that lay behind the decision this time to attack from the sea. There was an emphasis that the naval vessels that were used to attack Yemen attacked from quite a distance. In other words, they weren't exactly off the coast of Yemen when they carried out these attacks, but from somewhere around the Red Sea area. We also were emphasized that a number of the soldiers serving in the Israeli Navy are in fact girls, are females, and these girls were involved yesterday in carrying out these attacks against Yemen. So that's just another statement just to try and give an idea as to what's been going on. The attacks don't seem to have been significantly greater than any attacks that we carried out in the past. Once again, the idea is to try to somehow prevent the flow of arms and ammunition and weaponry and potentially economic activity through the ports in Yemen. Up until now, it's done some damage, but not enough to prevent missiles from being fired. And that was the message that we received loud and clear last night when the sirens were blared again, particularly around the Tel Aviv area. There were a few things that were slightly different about this missile attack last night. The first of which was the slightly strange message that we received from the IDF to say that the missile we believe has been intercepted. Not that it was intercepted, but it was most likely intercepted. That was the statement that was made by the IDF, which doesn't fill one with a great deal of comfort and security. Mm. We also understand that more than one interceptor was launched in order to try to intercept this missile. There is little doubt that the incoming missile indeed was intercepted. But then we understand that there were many, many pieces of shrapnel that fell. And in fact, it's interesting that the Argentinian president, Javier Milei, was in Jerusalem. And even though in Jerusalem they didn't have sirens, Mr. Milei was able to see from his hotel and capture on his phone video, the interceptors that were flying overhead of Jerusalem in order to intercept this incoming missile. And there has been some speculation that the Houthis might well have gone about carrying out their previous threat, which was that they were going to use different types of weapons and potentially weapons with more than one warhead. Now, when we saw this particular missile break up into all of those pieces, and when we hear that more than one interceptor was launched in order to try to intercept the shrapnel, those were the words that were being used, it all sounds a little kind of cagey, and it all sounds a little unclear as to exactly what's going on. Certainly, the vocabulary that was used around the missile launch yesterday and the interception and everything else that went around it was different than what we've experienced in the past. And this is leading many of us, including myself, to speculate that there is something different, and potentially there is a different warhead that's being used, and potentially even a missile with multiple warheads on board. The good news is that even though there were some reports of shrapnel falling, particularly in the Hebron area just south of Jerusalem, ultimately there were no reports of injuries, and that life has continued as usual. But there definitely was something a little different that happened yesterday, and that is certainly giving some food for thought. And this threat that there is going to be much more extensive and widespread retaliation for that attack against the ports yesterday, well, it may still come to fruition. But for now, at least, in spite of everything that has been launched against the Houthis in Yemen, they still continue to fire missiles towards Israel and seem to be quite successful, and even upping their game potentially in doing so.
Crazy. Absolutely a complete madness that this is allowed. President Trump continues to advise Prime Minister Netanyahu not to attack Iran. This is unfathomable. I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real. It's. I keep thinking this is all part of a strategic misinformation campaign, But maybe that's just my wishful thinking. What is going on here? Surely Trump can't be foolish enough to think that with all of these delays are really that they're just about negotiations. Surely he knows that the Iranians are playing for time.
So I think, I mean, a lot more information has come out, and I think it all really centers around that one conversation that happened the day before yesterday. I don't think there have been new conversations that have taken place since then, but quite a lot of information has now come out in the first instance about Trump's attitude towards Iran. And if we believe what's being written in the press, and you might be right that this is an attempt to misinform rather than to inform. But if we believe what is written in the press, then the press is saying that Trump has said to Netanyahu that he wants to try and avoid the military option at all costs, and that he would prefer to take away the threat of a military attack against Iran and not to negotiate under the threat of a military response. Those are at least the words that Trump has used, if we believe what the press has been saying. We understand that Netanyahu's response to that was that the military threat definitely needs to be maintained and that should always be in place. And then Trump said, even though Iran has given a not particularly positive response, there will continue to be talks, and there is definitely a desire to reach some sort of a peaceful conclusion rather than a military solution. So, as I say, those are the words that we understand from the press were said in this conversation. But it even goes a little further than that, because then there are some references to Trump's statements about the war in Gaza. And he says essentially that the war in Gaza has somehow played itself out, and that Netanyahu needs to find a way to end the war in Gaza. The obvious question is, and what about the hostages? There can be no end to the war until the hostages are home. And that's the message that Prime Minister Netanyahu is trying to put out in response to some of these reports about the conversation that took place. So I agree that I don't really understand what is real and what is not real. There are certainly some strange things that come out from the words from the mouth of Trump, if we believe what's written in the press. It's interesting that one press article that I saw maintains that this ongoing coordination between Trump and Netanyahu, even if it doesn't quite go the way that Netanyahu would like it to go, is something of a threat to Iran. It shows to Iran that there is a dialogue between Israel and America, that there is coordination, that they're speaking from, you know, on a single front rather than dividing and ruling, which the Iranians would prefer to see the case. So there is an argument that even though the discussions are not exactly what Netanyahu would like to hear, the fact that there is coordination is a threat to Iran. I'm not really quite sure what to make of it, because the other thing that Trump continues to say is that Iran will not be allowed to enrich uranium at all. None of this really stacks up for me. It doesn't all come together in a very logical and conclusive way. So, like you, Howard, I'm a little skeptical about what to believe and what not to believe.
And I guess time will just, well, we'll just have to keep an eye on it and see what transpires. Five countries have imposed sanctions on two ministers in Israel's government. Let's talk implications.
Yeah, I mean, these are obviously the five countries involved: are Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Norway, and the UK. These are countries that have diplomatic relations with Israel and are considered to be friendly countries. And they've come out singling out Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, who are two ministers in Israel's government. They are controversial ministers. They don't necessarily have full support of all Israelis or even those Israelis who are supporters of the coalition. And certainly amongst world Jewry, opinions are split about Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and their behavior and some of their statements and some of their lack of diplomacy and the views that they take. And I have little doubt that all the listeners will have their very strong views about Smotrich and about Ben-Gvir. However, having said all of that, I'm not sure that it is the place of a foreign government to single out individual members of a friendly country's government and to place sanctions upon them, and to even go further than just simply freezing their assets in that country or stopping any flows of funds or whatever the sanctions might involve, stopping them from traveling to that country. That's kind of one set of sanctions. But these sanctions go even further. And what the sanctions are threatening is that the Israeli banks who hold assets belonging to these two individuals should freeze those assets. If not, then there is a threat that there will be a move to try somehow to remove Israel from the SWIFT system, to cut Israel off from international transfers through using the SWIFT system, that could potentially damage the Israeli economy much, much more broadly. And of course, many, many other individuals who are not part of these sanctions. So I have my very skeptical views about whether this is the valid type of action to take against a friendly country or not. And I hope that the listeners will weigh in and bring their views and let us know. It's interesting, by the way, that what Smotrich has said, because, of course, he's the Minister of Finance and he has certain powers, but he said in response to this that because Israel acts as the clearinghouse for the Palestinian Authority, which means that all funds that flow in and out of the Palestinian Authority, no matter where they come from or where they go to, all flow through Israel. And so Smotrich says, if you're going to place these sanctions on me and freeze my assets, I'm going to stop Israel acting as the clearinghouse for the Palestinian Authority. No flows of funds through us to the
Very
Palestinian
dangerous
Authority.
Game. Yeah.
So this is a massively dangerous game. It's not very pleasant. I don't think that those five countries are really behaving in a smart way. It may well be that they're trying to show that they're friendly to Israel, but also pandering to their anti-Semitic electorate, who are people who feel that they should be taking a much firmer view against Israel. So they say, well, they're not taking a firm view against Israel, but they are singling out individuals in Israel who they think need to behave, you know, have a little bit firmer action. This is highly controversial. We can't, unfortunately, finish and get to the bottom of all of it right now. We've run out of time, but I'm sure we're going to talk more about this. And I hope that all the listeners will weigh in and let us know what they think.
That is where we leave it. It is 8:01. Anthony Rach, thank you as always. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.